Hello, everybody. This is Justin and Lizzie. We're here a little bit later than usual on this gorgeous sunny Sunday in London. It's 9 something, and we are very glad to be here for Turning Towards Life, which is our weekly unrehearsed and live foray into a subject that's meaningful to us. And today we've got a source, as usual, where we will be reading it together and then seeing where the conversation takes us. And Justin, this source is a continuation from last week, isn't it, by the same person who wrote last week's passage for us? And over to you to say how come this is what you've brought this week.
Thanks, Lizzie, and good morning, everyone. Welcome. Week 180 something. So lovely to do this. And we're doing this at an unusual time, Lizzie, because you and I are also right in the midst of teaching and leading our professional coaching course this weekend. So it's been a bit of a kerfuffle coming from one place to another, but very special to be doing this in the middle of this. Well, so this source, actually, Lizzie, this has come to us by a sort of a route that's involved both of us. So this book by Robert Mesley about process relational philosophy came into our orbit, both of us. And it's a very beautiful book, I think, about orienting to life as if life were a giant unfolding process and as if we were giant unfolding processes. And it's beautifully written, and it has this excellent chapter in it about power, about what is it to relate to power in a healthy way, not as a way of trying to dominate or manipulate or to treat ourselves and other people as objects, but as a way of being in a compassionate and creative and open way, being in the process of being powerful together, of having things happen in the world. And actually this source you selected, but it was one of the sources that we brought to our Turning Towards Life live event a couple of weeks ago, and you and I talked about it there, and it seemed to me that there's a whole load more conversation that we can have about this. And last week here, we talked about how, what it is to be in power, to use the power that we have to enable other people to step into relational power themselves. In other words, to be advocates for us humans being deeper and deeper and deeper into our reciprocity with one another and our being able to bring with ourselves to one another. And what might come from that, which is so different to using our power to squish other people or to get other people to be the way that we want them. It's a kind of radical freedom we can bring to one another. Anyway, I love this source because it also points out that two things, as we'll see when we read it. One is that very often our experiences of what it is to be powerful begin or not begin in our experiences of being parented, being brought up by adults when we're small. But also the thing I love about this is, although it's about parenting, it's also about how we are with one another generally. So I'm just reaching for it because of our little technical challenges this morning. It's gone off my screen. I'm bringing it back up now. And for everybody who's with us, if you're watching later or listening later, the place that you can find all the sources and the references, you can either join our Facebook group, which is just Turning Towards Life, and you'll always see them there. But you can also find the sources posted with every podcast episode. We always have a page that goes with it, notes that go with it, which have the sources on, and on our very beautiful turningtowards.life website, which has all the videos and all the sources, a huge, I think, and growing wonderful resource. And this is called The Relational Power of Parenting. It's from Process Relational Philosophy by Robert C. We don't quite know how to pronounce his surname, Mesel or Mesley. So we'll do the usual thing and I'll read it first. I have seen people who loved children enough to realize that mere unilateral obedience is the least of virtues. Valuable for preventing children from running out in front of trucks, but with little use for understanding or nurturing children's hopes, dreams, and creative abilities. merely demanding obedience gives adults little power to teach children to think for themselves, to make their own decisions, develop their own values or creativity, or grow in mutually loving relationships with their parents and others. Parenting that exercises relational power is hard work. It takes a lot of patience, self-control, emotional strength, and a willingness to bear much of the price for the children's mistakes. But the reward for relational parenting is greater joy at children's accomplishments and a deeper, more mutual love as children develop their own relational power.
I've seen people who've loved children enough to realize that mere unilateral obedience is the least of virtues. Valuable for preventing children from running out in front of trucks, but with little use for understanding or nurturing children's hopes, dreams, and creative abilities. Merely demanding obedience gives adults little power to teach children to think for themselves, to make their own decisions, develop their own values or creativity, or grow in mutually loving relationships with their parents and others. Parenting that exercises relational power is hard work. It takes a lot of patience, self-control, emotional strength, and a willingness to bear much of the price for the children's mistakes. But the reward for relational parenting is a greater joy at children's accomplishments and a deeper, more mutual love as children develop their own relational power.
Yeah, thanks, Lizzie, for reading that. So the thing that's really striking me in reading this, Lizzie, and hearing you read it, is what a tender spot this is that this points into for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
So as a parent myself, this feels very real and immediate to me. And I'm hoping that this will be true for all of us who are engaging with this, whether we're parents or not, which is the first part of me that this points into is, yes, my deep longing, actually, that other people, my children in particular, but also other people I come across, are able to step in to think for themselves, to make their own decisions, to develop their own values and creativity, to grow in mutually loving relationships. And how much that takes me letting go of the fearfulness I can feel and the wish to manipulate and control the world so it can be exactly the way I want it, which comes from both a fearful place and a loving place. Mm-hmm. So the fearful part of it is I won't be able to deal with it. I won't know myself. Something terrible will happen. And the loving place is the I know best place. And I just want to say that there's, in order to do this, has to be so much more than just a declaration to do it.
Mm.
There's really a lot of paying attention to our own inner wish to grasp life and to make life anything but an unfolding process that we have to get into in order to come anywhere near close to letting go enough to let go enough that we can allow this to happen and to hold on enough that we can have some influence, that we have some place, that we're not just abdicating our responsibility and our care. And it's hard to do, partly because we feel afraid, and it's also hard to do, at least for me, it's hard to do because there's quite a lot of shame involved in it. The moment I approach this, I also get reminded of all the times I intended to be this way and wasn't. And so there's a big shame thing going on, and unless for me anyway, I acknowledge all of those dynamics, that there's really good heartfelt intention here. There's also fear and shame and longing and self-criticism and wish to be in control. It's hard without being truthful about those to take this step and to say, my job is to help others, is to use my relational power to help others to step into their relational power. And that's risky, like all love. It's really risky because I cannot control how that will go.
Mm.
And when I name truthfully all of those, I can also feel a sense of, okay, I can do this. It's going to be difficult, and it's also going to be very, very life-giving, and I'm going to have to pay a lot of attention to myself as I go. It's not just going to be some easy breezy thing. The skillfulness involved in doing this, and I can cultivate that skillfulness if I pay attention to it.
Gosh, it's such a big thing, isn't it? This I can feel myself. There's so many tangents, so many things to say, so many things I feel when you're talking, and I really hear you on the kind of the shame and the fear and the thinking that we know best and where that comes from. And as you were speaking, it just kind of arose in me that, you know, maybe there are certain things that we can trust that will arise in us as humans if we have the container that allows us to flourish. And so maybe the conversation is about finding the fearful path and the one where we want to control everything, and letting that be seen, letting us acknowledge the shame and all of those things. And then kind of doing a radical experiment with faith in what naturally unfolds, not only physically, so we can kind of naturally allow our children to grow around us. Like, we know that if we feed them and bathe them and let them in the sunlight, you know, that there's certain kind of physical things that will just happen naturally, that are just, you know, if everything goes well, kind of par for the course. And then there's the kind of human development of capacities, and, you know, like this says, creativity and the ability to relate and all of that stuff. And I'm just feeling now, you know, maybe there's stuff that we really don't need to meddle with so much if we could do the thing that you're saying, which is to kind of take ourselves into the conversation of what is my responsibility and what isn't. You know, what if I could find a way to notice my fearful response and my reactivity and where that's coming from, and not use it to make things happen? You know, what if I could practice seeing that and holding it here with me, but not using my fear to have anything come about? And what if I could practice a kind of faith in human ordinariness and goodness that says there are certain things I really don't need to meddle with? And of course, I don't know what the answer to what that line is, you know, but it's like, if we were left to be creative of our own arising instincts, what would we create? How would we be creative? Whereas if somebody puts a paintbrush in my hand and makes me paint, maybe I wouldn't find it for myself and it wouldn't be mine. So there's something about how to be in relationship to what my true power is, myself as a human being. And in that self-knowledge and that self-understanding, it gives me some boundaries as to what I need to participate in and what I can stand back and allow. And I'm feeling into the moments at the moment, you know, Vespa's 1.5. And if I just don't manufacture anything, she does something. She finds something out of boredom. She finds a way out of nothingness. She's really creative without me saying, oh, shall we do this and shall we do that, and trying to kind of make anything up. So I'm in this inquiry as to what it means to trust the natural human capacities that there are, and keep doing what you were saying, Justin, which is noticing all of this stuff. And at along, you know, wherever I am on the journey, with other humans, with in parenting, with, you know, any kind of power relationship, which is in a way is everything. How can I keep noticing what's happening with me and where it's coming from, so that I don't keep projecting my fear and keep projecting my need for control onto other people and having their lives be determined by something that originates from control and fear? Because if I put the paintbrush in her hand, it's like, I'm worried that she's not going to be creative, or I'm worried that she's not going to find something to do, and she's going to be bored, and something's going to happen that I don't want. So I'm just looking at all these kind of micro moments of wanting to have things the way I think they should be, and noticing that they probably don't serve in the way that I think they do.
Yeah. So as I'm listening to you, Lizzie, what's happening within me is a wondering about this place where we get to bring ourselves and all of our gifts in service of the unfolding process that other people are, so we don't hold back. But equally, where we're not trying to do is just to fit others into the place in our drama that they might fit into. So if you want one way to be in life is to go, I'm the central character here, and everybody else around me is a player in the drama of my life, and my job is to make sure that they fit into exactly the place that they're meant to be in, and that they never stray outside of it. And we get worried when they do, and anxious when they do. But the alternative, which is a kind of radical non-participation in our own lives, with our own children, with other people around us, which is, oh, I just won't pay attention. I'll just let you do. You're going to become who you're going to become, and I've got nothing to do with it, is the other side of the same polarity. And it's also a fearful place to be. And there is, that's the wonder of all of Robert Mesley's work that we're talking about here, is that he keeps on reminding us that we're processes, not things. So what if we, the analogy that keeps on coming to me whilst you were talking is, and it's, of course, it's really incomplete, it's a partial analogy, but what if we related to one another, to our children, to one another, as if we were more like flowers that were going to bud, or plants that were growing? We'd get there that sometimes putting in some structure of support is really helpful, watering the soil, making sure that there's adequate light and nutrients, and all of that would really help. We can see that with plants, would help a plant to grow. And then we delight in, oh, the roses are blooming, or the lilies are blooming, or, you know, the tulips are opening. But with one another, it's really easy to get into a sort of object metaphor, which is you will be the satisfaction of my intentions in the world, or my fears in the world, and therefore I'm going to, my job is to make sure that you fit in. And of course the problem with it is first of all, it's enormously, there's a word, undignifying for all of us when we do that to one another. It really misses the depth and the beauty of what a human is. But the other problem is it actually never works out, because we can't control, anyone who's ever parented will find out that all of our efforts to do that with our children don't produce the thing that the fearful part of us wants to produce. And it also is true in our adult relationships, where we try to dominate other people in any kind of relationship, or in an organization that we work in, or all of the force and forces that it takes to live in that story keep on having us having to do things that will never produce the fantasy that we have, that people will fit into their place in my story. So there's a kind of radical reorientation of our understanding of what it is to be a human that Robert Mesley's work points into so beautifully, which is we're all unfolding processes, and can we participate alongside one another, using all of the gifts and the wisdom and the insight that we've got, which sometimes means with children, don't run out in the road. But that's, like he says, it's the best thing, I think he says, it's the least of virtues. So it is a virtue. There are times when it is a virtue to say, not this, and but it's the least of virtues. So the letting go here is, how much letting go and how much loving it takes.
And so kind of on the edge for me, I'm so hard to articulate, but if we are the ones who rely on our unilateral obedience using our positional power, it, in my experience, is also deeply unsatisfying for the person in the position of power. Because it's not anything less than the least of, anything more than the least of virtues for me as well, as the person who's in the position of power, who maybe knows more, who's older, who has more experience, bigger body, whatever. It feels like my unilateral power is the least of my virtues, as well as it releasing the least of another person's virtues. So it's my leastness playing with your leastness. And so it's so kind of appearing to me now that it's on both sides of the power relationship, one of our responsibilities when we do have relational power in our realms to consider and reflect on and learn how to act from, is that we have to say to ourselves, like, I might be using my unilateral obedient, I don't know, methods with the person in front of me, but in doing that, it makes me into that too. And there's much more to me than that. I think that's what's so important to me about this realm of relational power, is that when we get into the conversation about what that is and how that looks in a relationship and what it produces, I can feel like that's a creative space, that's meaningful. It's not habitual. It's not drawing on something brittle, but drawing on something much more universal, much more mysterious, much more intellectually stimulating, much more nuanced. Like there's so much more life erupting in it than just do this and then the person does it. Like I can feel like the dissatisfaction in the parts of my life where it's just a kind of, I say that something should be done so it gets done. I just, even as I say it, like, oh, well, that's a disappointment. Whereas there's something in the, you know, when he talks about how it's hard work. Relational power is hard work. And there's something about it being hard work that, as you say, that, you know, this word dignity comes up. That hard work of relating and being in power that builds someone else's capacity to be in relational power. Yes, it's hard work and it's deeply satisfying and important and creative. And there's something life-giving, something interesting, something more in it than the simplicity of kind of A to B, do this and that gets done. And then we don't even talk about that again. Like it doesn't produce anything, it feels like to me. Whereas if we can be in this conversation about power from the inside of the way that we relate and using our relationship to have things happen rather than our instructions and our demands and our preferences even, it makes me go, ooh, this is exciting now. I can find the life in this. This feels important and like something new is going to be built between us, which is kind of why we're here together anyway. Whether we're a parent and a child or a boss and an employee or whatever, we're all here, we're all put together for certain reasons. And if we can create out of that space of relatedness, that feels very purposeful to me.
I love this, what you just said about why we're together anyway. So if the point of our being together is just that we'll collapse into a diminished sense of ourselves and then try to control, use our power to try to control one another, we're actually missing the great gift of being together, which is that my gifts and capacities might amplify yours and yours mine.
Mm.
Even if we have, you know, especially when we have disagreements and different points of view, that right there in that tension between the different places that we stand, there's such aliveness between the polarities between us. And we could collapse together into a diminished view of what's possible for humans. So and this is the thing that I was feeling whilst you were speaking, is for me to treat you as that your creativity and freedom is dangerous because it will take life in a way that's the way I don't want it to go. I also have to treat me in a very diminished way, which is kind of along the lines of, I won't be able to cope with it if you're actually you. So we're right in this tiny space of what it is to be a human, which is to try and control things so that we never feel uncomfortable, and we never feel dissatisfied, and we never feel surprised. And that's why I appreciated what you said, Lizzie, earlier about faith. That there's a kind of faith that this takes, a faith in the capacity that we have, that I have and that you have, say right now when we're in this conversation, to navigate and respond to whatever happens, that when we find ourselves in difficulty or in uncertainty, the nature of being a person is that we can draw on our love and our creativity and our responsiveness and our wisdom and our compassion and all of the different virtues that we have. That's what we're here for, is to respond to the unfolding unknown, instead of the other story, which is we're here basically to stay really, really tight and really, really safe and never be surprised. So there's a this takes a faithfulness in the, well, it's a sort of trust that life's unfolding, which might take us in all kinds of directions that we don't anticipate or maybe won't like and maybe we'll want to respond to, but there's something to trust in the unfolding here, because it's the nature of being a human that we have the capacity to do that. And that applies for parenting children, and knowing that children don't always know about not running out in the road in front of the truck, so that's a place to act, but trusting something up, there are lots of other places to trust. And between adults, trusting that we'll find a way rather than trying to avoid the possibility that we might ever end up in a way that's not the one that we were hoping for.
And I love that bit that you said, Justin, about when I'm, you know, basically not comfortable with who you're being, the definition of myself I have to have is that I can't handle you. It's such a thing, isn't it? It's such a thing. It's so not separate. And I feel like for me, there's a kind of shard of hope in all of this as well, though, that I can feel like when, like I've got somewhere to go when everything goes wrong according to my plan. You know, I think that's part of the kind of the resealing of the thing, is it when my plan starts going wrong and I then start clinging to my plan even more, or the way I want to control things and control an outcome. If that's the only thing that I've got, and I haven't got any other options available to me, like faith, like trusting you, like opening myself, like becoming less defended, like relaxing my body, like if I don't have all those things available to me and all I can become is more grippy onto the way I think things should be, that feels really scary to me when I just stand in that position for a second. It's like I haven't got anything else, so I've got to keep trying to control you because I don't have anything else. So now I'm feeling really relieved that, you know, we have these conversations, we have our practices, we have our reflections, we have the books that we read and the conversations we listen to of other people's, all of the resources and the human, you know, all the sources we can learn from as humans from each other and each other's worlds and each other's experiences, so that we don't have to just rely on ourselves. Because this is a really scary place to keep coming back to my same control mechanism and thinking it's going to do something different next time. And this is where all of our patterns come from, where, you know, you suddenly think, oh my God, this is happening again. Oh, well, maybe it's something to do with me. You know, that kind of thing happens and there's somewhere to go. So I'm feeling really glad at the moment in this conversation that I can, you know, see lots of ways that I try and have things happen the way I want them to happen, but that there's another route if I need it. and hopefully that I choose it before I do that too many times to kind of distort anything too far, but that we have each other and we have these conversations and these reflections feels really important for us as humans to stay open.
What a wonderful place for us to end today, Lizzie, with a reminder that this is not work that we can ever do on our own. And perhaps that shouldn't be surprising given that what we're talking about is the exercise of relational power, which is never unitary.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being in this conversation again, Lizzie, and thank you everybody who's here with us, whether you're on Facebook or Clubhouse or listening to the podcast. You're also welcome to be with us, and we will be back again, all being well, at 9 o'clock UK time next week, next Sunday, and you can catch recordings in all of the usual places and at turningtowards.life, and we're so glad to be doing this, and we'll see you then. Bye bye.
Bye everyone.